evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And as you know, this is one of my favorite times of the week. And I brought one of my favorite people with me.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Indeed. Welcome, Richard. We just love having you here.
Thank you.
And if you have added yourself to our mailing list, then you would know that our guest tonight is Rudolf Steiner. Richard, in case there are some people who are not on our mailing list, tell them how to get on our mailing list, please.
By all means, you just go to the website called the2012countdown.com and enter your name and your email address, and you'll get an email sent to you asking you to click on this link, and you click on that link and it will all be done.
I just love it. So for those of you who are not on our list, join our list so you know all of our people that we have on the radio show and also a lot of other wonderful information.
There's lots of other stuff on that website if you haven't spent time there. I know most people listening will have done, and that's where you will find also all of our past radio shows from the last maybe 3 years, perhaps, on that website.
That's amazing. So we've been doing this for over 3 years, huh?
hard to figure, but let's face it, you've been doing radio shows for perhaps 20, so I'm a neophyte at this game.
We're glad to have you, neophyte. You and all of your friends. So, as we said, our guest tonight is Mr. Steiner. And for those of you who are familiar with our work, you know that Richard connects with our guests and talks about his energy and the message for today. And so, Richard, have you connected with Mr. Steiner?
I have, but before I do, I might just take a couple of moments to talk about Rudolf Steiner, because he's one of those characters that is, for most people, pretty much unknown in the world, which is, I think, quite, on one level, quite extraordinary, given who he was and what he did, and the fact that there's really very little public trace of the man's life is quite extraordinary. He lived from, I think, 1861 to 1925. So he spanned the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century and lived through the First World War. And he was a very interesting individual because as a child, he was aware of being able to, you might say, communicate within, to connect within and to be aware that there was an inner life, you might say, an inner expression of existence that most people were and are unaware of. And you might consider the unfolding of that to be what we might term the spiritual journey. And so Steiner was one of those who had a lot of awareness of this from a very young age, in fact. And so he felt somewhat estranged from others who didn't share that experience. But he didn't walk a path which saw him shut that down, but rather he walked a path to open it up. And so for me, I find him a very interesting individual because he was one who spanned this dimension, you might say. He was interested in science and art and music and theatre, medicine, extraordinary array of areas.
Agriculture. And,
yes, agriculture. And he connected this to this inner awareness. In fact, he would say that what was his knowledge and understanding of these things in the, you might say, temporal domain arose from his spiritual understanding. And the man wrote something like 350 books. It's hard to imagine that he had that kind of output, and yet that's the reality of things. And yet today, his name is virtually suppressed. Some people are aware of biodynamic farming, which is a kind of specialized version of organic farming. And others are aware of the Steiner or Waldorf schools that arose from his approach. But outside of that, there's very little known about him. And in my opinion, that is because what the man was talking about was this correlation between the inner and the outer. And if you think about the various players in our world, these two things are either suppressed, if you talk about the spiritual aspect, when it comes to things like science, or it's divorced from this outer world when you look at religion, even though in a sense it tries to correlate, but really it's not as if it's arising from an individual level. You might say it's codified so much in our world through this format of religion. And so you might consider both sides of the equation, if you will, the so-called spiritual, which I don't consider to be spiritual at all, but religious, and the scientific, the so-called scientific world, which in large measure today is packaged in a manner that is in denial of anything which is not of the temporal domain, really didn't like the existence of Rudolf Steiner. And of course, you may or may not be aware, certainly it's my opinion that this scientific model that we have today, this so-called scientific worldview, which is temporally based, has been created for the same purpose, you might say, of so many other ideologies or models in our world, to control us in a very structured manner. So when you examine that, and the forces that are undertaking those kind of things also control the printing processes in our world, it's not surprising that this extraordinary output from Steiner is largely unknown in our world. Quite an extraordinary man. I will also add that for those of you who are incarnated cherubim, this man was a cherubim, and there is one of your cherubim colleagues in this world who knows that he is a reincarnation of Steiner. So it's an interesting journey. So I just wanted to give that little background, I guess, before we get started here. Not that I know at all where Mr. Steiner is going to take us.
I'm really glad you gave us this background. Thank you, Richard.
So, and so he is here, and let me describe his energy for you. And there are many elements in the energy that I experience as I connect with him. Again, I experience his energy centrally, but it's not in a narrow way. It is quite an encompassing kind of energy. There is love, there is wisdom, there is compassion, there is understanding. It's very interesting energy. I don't think I've experienced an energy working with someone before that is so, I guess the word is diffuse. It's not that it's not powerful, because it is, but it's very diffuse. It's like it almost encompasses everything. It's very interesting, very unusual energy. So you'd like me to see if he has a message for us?
That would be a good idea.
Let's see what he has to say. I wish to begin by thanking these two for this opportunity to come forth in this manner, because it is a rare opportunity. And again, it was not one that I was looking for, but welcomed when it came my way. And I struggle in ways to find a way to express something for you that gives you some sense of my life and what I represented. I do not say that in some demeaning or meaningless way, but rather it is difficult to summarize the breadth of what I was involved in. And I do not say this in any arrogant manner, because the way I lived my life was to bring forth the guidance, the wisdom, the information which was given to me freely and openly from within. I very much lived an inner life that I brought forth into the outer. And so many people who were aware of my work were amazed at the breadth of things that I covered and my ability to, for example, discuss healing solutions with practicing medical doctors in a manner that they found useful and contributory, and on another level, to discuss approaches to agriculture and cultivation with farmers. But that was the truth of the matter. And it's only because I spent my early years refining, you might consider, my ability to bring forth the inner guidance, which truly is available to anyone. There was really nothing special about me, other than I did not deny this inner life, you might consider it, inner wisdom, inner guidance would be too narrow a term. It was like this almost flood of information that would come to me once I practiced my ability to bring it forth. And indeed, you might consider I lived a great deal of my life in what you might consider a meditative state, because when I lectured, and I gave many lectures, I gave as many as 400 lectures a year throughout Europe. So you can see I was not exactly idle. And when I gave those lectures, I simply shared the information that was relevant to those with whom I was communicating, both in a geographic sense, but also in an interest area sense. And this information was simply there for me. It's like I tapped into this wellspring of universal knowledge. And it is a knowledge, as I say, that is available to all. And yet its knowledge and the ability to access it is largely suppressed in your world. Indeed, if you examine the great yogis of your world, perhaps you get closest to how this works. The great Babaji would be the most shining example that I can think of, but there are others who have lived, who have operated in this manner, bringing this wisdom forth across so many areas, because it is available to be brought forth. And in truth, most people who develop a particular skill, you might consider, whether it be in music, composing music, or even in the areas of scientific study, what they don't recognize in large measure is that they are being guided inwardly. Now, certainly some of those who have been musical composers or artists would recognize that they were simply bringing forth what they were given. The great Mozart or Mendelssohn, these composers who were writing extraordinary pieces of music in their early teens, would willingly recognize that they were simply given this material. And I would describe this in my case also. It just so happened that because of who I was and my interests and my cultivations, which were driven from the inner aspect first, coming forth in the outer, it meant that my ability to access information across such a broad spectrum was unusual. And this is why I was able to give the number of seemingly impromptu lectures that I gave, and also wrote so many books, because I was simply speaking what was given to me, and others would write it down. Records show that I had many what are referred to as stenographers, an array of people who would simply write down what I was speaking. In those days, shorthand was such a critical skill, to be able to gather information as somebody spoke it. Today you would just speak it into a microphone and transcribe it and have somebody edit it, and in ways it's much easier. But a stenographer could do quite a good job of this if they were masters of shorthand. And so I surrounded myself with a group of women who had this capability. And without that team, you might say, that supported me really as I traveled, then I could not have been as productive as I was. So, as I say, I don't claim anything special about myself in what I'm saying to you here, but rather giving you some understanding of why I was able to operate on such a broad spectrum and bring forth information which time has shown was of value and of, in some cases, significance as the world unfolds. And I am aware that Richard made some comments at the beginning about the intentional suppression of my information and my teachings. And it is my view that his words are very accurate in terms of describing the model of modern science, which has been, you might say, emasculated in comparison with science in my time, where a great number of the great scientists acknowledge their spiritual connections, whereas this has been largely eroded, with champions such as Richard Dawkins being in complete denial of these skills and abilities. But there indeed are many, many others who would argue that a human being is strictly a being in this temporal experience. And I can assure you that this is far from true. Indeed, the body of work that I was able to produce and the spectrum across which I produced it was a living testimony to the absolute idiocy and inaccuracy of such a notion. But to sustain that model is critical to how those who run your world wish to present the world to the public. And so the suppression of my writings and my approach and understandings of life, the nature of what it means to be a human being, this marriage of the spiritual and the temporal, this dance between the two, and the way in which the fundamental spiritual essence of an individual bubbles up and is expressed in a particular lifetime. All of this runs counter to both religion and to modern science. And so, in large measure, most of what I had to say was suppressed, really beginning in my lifetime. And sadly, there are those who seek to follow my work that have in ways codified it such that it has become stultified, and like yet any other religion, they have become very religious about how they interpret what I wrote and said and its meanings. And this is absolutely contrary to the way I lived my life and encouraged others to live theirs, which was a dynamic process, not codified by any particular set of words, because those words were simply, you might consider, a doorway, a trigger, a pathway that you might follow to begin to open this understanding about which I speak. So it saddens me to an extent that what I was sharing has been suppressed. But my friends, it will come forth again as events unfold, as this new consciousness comes forth. In ways, I came forth as an illustration of this truth for those who wished to grasp it and to understand rather more what life was about. You see, I understood about the fall. I understood who Yeshua was. I understood that not long after my time in the world, there would be a time of transition. And you, my friends, are living in this time of transition where you might consider the remembering of who and what a human being is and what it means to be a human being will be embraced once more. And the example that I represented in the current consciousness will be embraced and understood far more than it is today. So in a sense, I am saddened in the short term, but I am content that my real demonstration was for the future, not so much for the time in which you currently live, where the suppression is very intense. And so I have not tried in any manner to, you might say, engage with any of the specific areas in which I brought forth information, which perhaps encompassed almost every area of human endeavor. That might sound extreme, and I don't say it with any kind of arrogance, as I say, because I simply saw myself as a conduit. I came forth with a mission to act in this manner, to bring forth this information in this demonstration, you might consider, of the potential of being a human being. And I am proud that I was able to deliver on my mission as I planned it. And so it is.
Thank you, the two of you, for such wonderful information. And I would like to invite our listeners to call in with their questions. I'm sure that you would have some. While we are waiting for people to call in, I would like to understand what biodynamic agriculture is. Perhaps you can give us some thoughts on this.
As I said earlier, it is a form of organic farming, although it is quite different from what you might consider traditional organic farming, which seeks to use natural organic fertilizer. In a sense, that is what you do with biodynamic farming, except the amounts of materials that are used are really quite small. You take what you might consider a particular mixture of ingredients, which I will not go into here, but rather they are essentially natural, which you place, you might find a little hard to believe, but you bury it in a cow's horn for a particular amount of time, and it is buried at a particular time and then dug up at a particular time, and the contents of that cow's horn are then dissolved in water, or diluted in water, you might consider, to make a spray. And you might consider that you could look at biodynamic farming as a little like homeopathy. where you are working on an energetic level rather than on a direct level. And surprisingly, plants understand this and respond and grow. On a gross level, the nutrition comes from the soil. And yet, just as with a human being who, if they understand how to do it, can live on energy, so it is in very broad measure with plants also. Indeed, they get most of what they actually need from the sun. You might find that hard to believe, but that is the case. And so, in a sense, biodynamic farming is the use of these carefully prepared small quantity sprays that are used that not only provide nutrients to the plants, but also provide protection for the plants as they grow. And so it is a very productive way to grow if you utilize it fully. Unfortunately, much of the understandings have been lost in time, but that is the essence of what is contained in the full implementation of biodynamic farming.
Thank you so much. Now we have Renee on line one. Renee, what is your question, please?
Well, my question is are we ever going to get to a no money system where we have a lot better funds so that all of our, you know, resources are spread more evenly between all of the people?
Richard, do you understand the question?
Yes. Renee, it is a complex question in a way, because your question arises from within the current consciousness where there is so much inequity, and that inequity is intentional. In truth, most of the wealth of the world is held by an even smaller number of people than the so-called 1%. It is almost a handful of people who control almost all of the world's wealth. It is hard to imagine. And so this inequity is of their direct creation. It is well hidden, but that is the truth of the matter. And so it is very much welded to this current consciousness. And you need to understand that you live in a time where there will be a transition to a different way of living. The situation is that all which exists, including your physical form, comes forth from the background energy field. And indeed, humanity, when the physical form is fully activated and the processes are practiced, the human being can bring forth anything from the background energy field of its choosing. You can manifest, you might consider. And so the issue of inequity, when viewed from a physical resource perspective, simply disappears when the human being has that ability. They can also disappear those things that they have finished with. So the situation where you have so much waste in your world will also disappear because it can return to the background energy just as it came forth therefrom. So in that circumstance, which will be part of your experience in the not too distant future, the notion of inequity will simply disappear, and the use of temporal resources, you might consider, as a mechanism for enslaving the human population and in many cases destroying the human population will simply disappear. And so I encourage you to hold that vision rather than hoping to see the disempowerment of those few that control your world within this consciousness. That will not occur.
Thank you for your question, Renee, and that wonderful answer.
Thank you so
much. You're welcome, dear. Mr. Steiner, can you give us some information that would be helpful to people with regards to self-healing or healing others?
There are many modalities of healing in the world. Of course, most of these healing modalities are denied in the Western world, where the allopathic system based on pharmaceuticals has been promoted, alongside of which there has been this sanctifying, you might consider, of the Western medical doctor in his or her white coat as being the vehicle for health and healing. It is part of the distortions of your world. And there are many modalities of healing you might consider that work extremely well. You have, I mentioned homeopathy earlier, and that is a very powerful modality that has been suppressed. You have many forms of energetic healing that are active in your world. For example, the work that is done by Dr. Eric Pearl is a very good illustration of what's possible energetically. And then you have the most unusual skills displayed by that individual who calls himself John of God in Brazil, who uses techniques and processes that seem impossible in the physical world as you take it to be. And yet he heals people, and he uses equipment and tools that would seem to be likely to cause infection and severe damage, but do not. So there is such a spectrum of approaches to healing. But the most important step in healing, in fact, is prevention. And by that I mean, if an individual takes care of their physical body using all of the things that are readily available, such as drinking good, clean water, which has not been fluoridated or interfered with, to eat good organic food, to meditate, to exercise, and to heal any, you might say, emotional traumas that you have in your life. If you take care of all of these things, then you will almost certainly have a very healthy physical body that you can readily heal most things that occur, and it simply will not suffer from things like cancer and so many other illnesses and diseases. So the best solution for healing is a path of prevention. Now, you might consider that you perhaps already have some kind of debilitation, and so you wonder if this is applicable. And I will say to you that above all else, these processes and techniques are crucial to your health, regardless of how you might consider your current state of health. They are the essence of not only prevention, but also healing in most cases. So this, above all else, is the best approach to healing. It's called prevention.
Thank you. In your work, were you connecting with universal consciousness?
I connected with many sources of wisdom. Universal consciousness was one of those to whom I connected. There were many beings who would come forth with areas of knowledge that they would share with me, because there are beings in the spirit world that have undertaken levels of specialization, although they too have access to this total spectrum of knowledge and wisdom that I described earlier. There were times when I was connecting with the being in the center of this cosmos that you might call all there is, or source, or prime creator, or just God, if you will. But really quite a spectrum of beings. And a lot of the information that I gathered really came to me from my monad. I had a very active connection back to my monad, and most people really do not understand the level of wisdom and experience that is held within their monad, that totality of their soul as was originally created. So there were many sources that brought information to me. And really, my experience was that whenever I needed information on a particular subject, it was just there for me. And at times, I did not even know who was giving me the information. It's like there were all these agreements that had been set up before I was born, such that these individuals would come forth as required and give me whatever information I needed. It truly was like that. And when a new body of information would start to come forth after I had taken the first, you might say, tranche of that information, then I would investigate to find out who was sharing that information with me. It was really like a dance of life that most of humanity has no idea about, but in fact is there for everyone if they are willing to open the door.
Thank you. You made a statement that I think is very important, and that is connecting with your monad. Can you give us some sort of thoughts about how people would connect with their monad?
The first thing is to practice meditation. The second thing is to understand that the monad exists, and also that you have a soul, which is, you might consider, a few particles of that monad that were sent forth to incarnate as you in this lifetime. And you also have what is called your higher self, which is, you might consider, an energetic or a spiritual guide of sorts that stays with you through your lifetime. And firstly, it's important to understand that these elements exist, because if you don't know they exist, then you can't begin to open the door to communicate with them. So having understood that they exist, you also then need to understand that you can communicate with any of these at will. Indeed, you can communicate with any form of consciousness. Once I understood what was possible, I, just as the two of you do at times, would communicate with plants and with animals and with rocks even, understanding that all of these things had consciousness. And so it was like I lived my life in this completely different world from most people, with this awareness and understanding that all was available to anyone, and that my life was simply a demonstration that that was possible.
Thank you. Can you give us some thoughts about diet? People seem to be eating the wrong things and not enough of the right things. Give us a little information on that, if you would.
Firstly, it is important to recognize the powerful forces at work that are seeking to make people ill through what they eat. So much of processed food is distorted by the presence of refined modern wheat, refined GMO corn, sugar, refined sugars, and so on. All of these things are added to the foods to firstly make them addictive, and secondly to degrade the health of the individual. You might find that to be strange, that the food companies would be focused on these things, but they are. You need to understand who owns these companies and their agendas. So this is the first thing to be aware of, to recognize that the food industry does not have your best interests at heart. And so I would recommend to you that the food that you consume should be, as far as possible, organically produced, whether it be meat or vegetables or whatever it is that you are consuming, fruit and so on. And secondly, I encourage you to purchase single ingredient foods. By that I mean buy the vegetables and the fruits and the meat and whatever else it is that you're going to produce your food from, the spices and so on, rather than buying pre-processed product. Because when you do that, you minimize the opportunity for the food industry to, you might say, screw with you, because that is what they are doing. So that is the first fundamental thing to be aware of. And then once you are willing to eat food of the type that I describe, then I encourage you to simply follow your body's guidance to you about what it wants you to eat. There has been this practice that has grown up in the world of people believing they need to eat three meals a day, and this is not accurate. I would say to you that you should eat when you feel driven to eat, and eat what quantity you feel comfortable eating at that time, and then again, not eating until you feel prompted to do so. And in this manner, you will have a much more natural balance. As I say, avoid sugar added to your diet and avoid the refined flours and so on, which have become such a part of the diet. And then allow the body to inform you about what it wants to eat. And the more you do this, along with drinking lots of fresh water, you will find that the body finds a balance and a comfort that most people don't know or can't imagine exists.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Give us some thought as to what happens energetically when you bless your food.
It is an interesting notion that you are raising, and it comes back to some of the things that I have already spoken about. Firstly, there is real value in blessing your food. As I said, the essence of a human being is spiritual in nature, and the same is true of the food that you consume. And so, in a way, blessing your food is as much an acknowledgement of the truth of what that food is and its role in the functioning of the human body as it is about acknowledging a creator who might have brought it forth. I know that tends to be the approach of, you might consider, blessings of food today in your world, but really you should be giving thanks for the wonder of existence, is a more accurate way that I would put it. And blessing the food in a way activates the energies inherent in that food, and so it connects more powerfully with your physical body. The benefits to the body of food when you bless it is far greater than when you do not.
I would like to thank you for this wonderful information that you have given to us, and Richard, for you for taking it. You've done a masterful job with this. Thank you both.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Now, while we are having a discussion with the two of us, Richard, give us some sort of an idea as to some new things on the horizon that we are working with?
Well, the most immediate one, I guess, is the conference call, which I believe we have next Tuesday, where Yeshua is joining us to answer participants' questions. And I already have quite a queue of questions from people, some quite fascinating questions. And so that our session will be recorded and be made available to the to those who have registered for the call. So I'm quite looking forward to that, actually. I think the information that will come forth from there could be quite fascinating.
I think so.
Some of the questions relate to the time of Yeshua. Some of them relate to what we understand to be unfolding, and so on. Quite a broad spectrum of questions.
That does sound something to look forward to and is exciting. I would like for you to discuss a little bit about the Templar video that we have in case there's people who have not availed themselves of it. The information on that video is quite remarkable.
Yes, there's a couple of years ago, Carolyn received one of those taps on the shoulder that she gets. Mm-hmm. And a Templar knight came forth and told her that the Templars wanted to give us some information about who and what they were, what they were doing, how they lived, the things that they set up in the world in their time, and some of which still exist in our time. And they wanted to explain the relationship between what they were doing and this time. And so spread over about a year and a half, I guess, they gave us a whole series of messages, interwoven, one to Carolyn, one to me, of various lengths, from a few minutes to over 30 minutes, I think's the longest of them. And really the information is quite extraordinary. So we took those messages that were given to us, we recorded those messages, and then we had our friend Adam in Greece take those messages and to surround them with an amazing array of images that complement the words that were coming forth, not just the words, but the energy of those words. And that's why we did them as recordings, because the spoken word carries a lot more energetically, a lot more information than the written word. So we package them up in that manner, and they're available. There's a website we have called The True Stories of the Templar Knights, and there'll be a link to it in the email that goes out with this, the recording of this show. So you can access it there, but quite extraordinary information. And the feedback that we've had on those recordings has been quite extraordinary. I also, when you order the videos, I also organise to send you a copy of the text of those recordings, so you have a written version, as well as some exercises that the Templars asked us to make available. So they're all in the text that comes to you.
That is wonderful. Richard, we have an individual who has called in on line one. This has to be very quick because we're just at the end of the radio show. And that is Lou on line one. You have a question? Can we hear it real quickly? We're running out of time.
Sure. I really don't have much of a green thumb, and I just wanted to know when I plant seeds when I plant seeds and try to grow things, I tend to overwater them, and I don't seem to have a good intuition on bringing them, to raise them and to make them into plants. And I know I'm doing something terribly wrong. So I was just wondering if you had some guidance on really starting the seedlings, the seeds, and really making sure that we grow them in the proper way.
Richard, we only have a couple minutes for this. I don't know how quickly you can give an answer to Lou.
There are two things, Lou, that I would suggest to you. The first is, in your world today, there is so much information available on the internet about how to grow any plants, any seedlings, and this is the first step to follow that guidance. And those guidances will include how best to water the plants. It sounds like you have an indoor garden that you are dealing with, and I encourage you to use the right pots to grow these things in. So that's the first step. The second one is to just as we were discussing with food, to bless the seeds as you're about to plant them. This will also help them. And the third thing is to practice following your inner guidance. If you operate from this place that you don't know how to do it and you're incompetent at it, then you are putting a barrier between you and a very natural process of life, which is the germination and growing of plants. They do it for themselves without your interference in normal circumstances. And so rather, I suggest that you allow yourself to connect intuitively with the knowledge that you have about how to allow particular plants to grow. It is not that you do anything, but rather it is in essence a process of allowing the plants to do what they know how to do, and making sure that what you do is supporting that rather than getting in the road. So trust that you know how. It is implicit in your being alive that you know how to support and encourage plants to grow.
Thank you so much. Richard, we're at the end of the show. Any last word, up to a minute?
Well, really, no. I would just like to thank Rudolf Steiner for coming forth and spending his time with us. I must say, I had personally read some of his books some years ago, and opening up this connection has inspired me to seek out some of his writings, particularly on his spiritual models and so on, which really sound, as I read about them, very, very close to my own view of things. So I thank you for coming forth, and indeed the one who prompted that we might do so, the one who is an incarnation in this lifetime from the same monad as Dr. Steiner was.
I'd like to thank the two of you and all of our listeners for tuning in. And I'd like to thank those at BBS Radio that take care of us. All is appreciated. So good night for now. Until next time.
Indeed. Good night for now.